Hello, you're very welcome to Inside the Studio, episode 8 today, recorded on the 13th of March, 2013. You're very welcome to the show. I'm your host, Michael McAndrew, and if you're watching the live stream, you might know that pre-show has been a bit of an ordeal, to say the least. There's been so many technical issues. I wanted to do a really cool show for you today, and everything's been going against me. I don't want to jinx it. I'm going to touch wood here, if you believe in that kind of stuff. Basically, Expert Broadcaster has been kind of going a little bit weird. Like, settings were resetting. And then my demo computer over here has been going a little bit weird, because I want to do a demo today. But let's see how much we can get done before more issues start coming up. Alright, so today I want to talk to you about live streaming video. We already talked about live streaming audio and why you'd want to do that, so I'm going to cover that. I'm also going to give you an Expert Broadcaster live demo. If you remember in the last episode, I gave you my studio tour. I want to go more in depth with my setup and the way I've got stuff set up for you. I'm going to go through an Expert Broadcaster demo there. I'm also going to talk a little bit about a brilliant WordPress plugin called PowerPress. And I'm going to talk about an email that every podcaster received from iTunes. Every podcaster who has a podcast RSS feed and podcast on the iTunes podcast directory, they got an email. And I'm going to go over what that means to podcasters. So let's get started. There's a lot of stuff I want to talk about on today's show. So let's get started by talking about live streaming video. Now, as I said, I already talked about live streaming audio. But now I want to go through live streaming video. And I want to just explain why I live stream, because I do. You can tune in every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, 8 p.m. UK time. I think that's about 3 p.m. Eastern time. And so you can just tune in. I've got a Justin.tv live stream feed. I've got a chat room up here. And I can talk to the people on the live stream. And you can see pre and post show. You can see all the issues that I've had. Like today, I'm starting 20 minutes late. But and I want to apologize for that. But you can see all this kind of stuff behind the scenes. You can talk to me and interact with me if you wish to do that kind of thing. If you just want to see a really kind of a polished show without the pre and post show and any of that, you don't have to watch live. But you can do that if you want. And I really love live streaming because I've got a chat room in here right in front of me so people can interact with me during the show. They can ask questions. If they don't quite understand what I'm saying, they can say, Michael, I don't quite understand what you're saying. And this is really beneficial to me because a lot of the time I tend to go really technical. People don't understand what I'm saying. And then I need people to say, hang on, Michael, I don't know what you're saying. And then I'm like, okay, now I can explain this to you. Because that happens to me. I go way too technical and no one knows what the hell I'm talking about. And also, like, live streaming forces me to do the podcast in one take. For example, up to about episode 20 of Talks About Tech Weekly, my technology podcast, I did it pre-recorded, and I used to do about 5-6 takes trying to get the podcast right, and that meant so much more post-production for me after the fact. And because I'm not put under this pressure to do everything right. So when I live stream, I tend to be a lot more, I tend to get it right in one take anyway. And even if I make a mistake, I just go on, unless it's a really bad mistake. I just continue on with the show. So that's another thing that I really like about live streaming. And another thing is I watch a load of audio podcasts and they all do video live streams. So you can see the behind the scenes. I absolutely love this. You might just do an audio podcast, but you can still do a video live stream. So people on the live stream can see the video. They can see the behind the scenes. And I love that. I love that. All the audio podcasts I listen to, I also tune into the live stream with the video. I absolutely love doing that. I love seeing the behind the scenes, the pre and the post show, and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, why would you live stream video? that's a few answers. You know, you can talk with your community. You can have your chat room up. People can say, they can ask you questions. They can interact during the show. And also, it might be more beneficial for you as a podcaster. It all depends on the person, of course. And also, I think it can get more more viewers and more listeners to your show if you do a live stream. Just saying. So, the next question here is, should you live stream your podcast straight away? It depends on the podcast. For me, with Talks About Tech Weekly, my first podcast, I didn't live stream straight away. And that was mostly due to restrictions from the gear that I had. I was podcasting on a very limited budget. I didn't have a lot of gear. I didn't have the right equipment to do a live stream at that point. And the other thing was my confidence. I was very shy and I wasn't really comfortable with podcasting and speaking at the time. But once I hit about episode 20, I said, I'm ready to go live streaming. I'm ready for people to interact with me. I'm ready for this. And I think this will be very beneficial for me. And so I went and I did that. And it's been I've had such a great experience live streaming. I just love doing it. Now, it depends on the podcast that you're doing. So, for example, if you're doing a podcast that there's a lot, if it's just a talking head type podcast like what I do, or, you know, you're showing a laptop screen or something like that, showing a few presentations or something on your laptop during the show, then definitely a live stream is possible. But if you're doing advanced graphics, advanced tutorials that you have to prepare beforehand and kind of edit it all in, and if it's not possible to do outside of post-production, then I think you can still do a live stream so people watching live can see you producing that show. But you have to think, for the people who are watching live, it's not going to be the same experience as people who are watching the finished product. And also, if you know, you can do that, but really it mightn't suit the type of show. So you have to take into account a number of different things. And then there is what service you should go with for your live stream. There's a number of different live streaming services. I mean, there's a load of them, and it just depends on what your needs are. The first one I'm going to talk about is Justin.tv. I use Justin.tv on my live stream since I started live streaming, I'd say about over a year ago, I think. I started live streaming and I used Ustream.tv. It's got a free basic account, and that's the account that I had because I couldn't afford to buy a premium account. But it is ad supported. And that was one thing I didn't like about Ustream, was I completely understood that you had to make money, but what I didn't understand is why, like, every half an hour they would play an ad. It force the viewers to watch an ad. And that's really taking from the live stream experience. They're getting right in the way. I mean, I don't mind ones that pop up, but they don't stop the stream or anything like that. Whereas with Ustream, they play an ad before you get onto the live stream. Then once you get onto the live stream, after like 15 or 30 minutes, it starts playing another ad for you. And it's kind of forcing it. So really, if you want to go with Ustream.tv, you really want to go with a premium plan. Now, Ustream has a lot of really great features for podcasters, allows you to record your live streams right to Ustream and store them so that you can have this as like a backup recording, which I did. You have 10 gigabytes on the free version. On the basic plan, you have 10 gigabytes of storage. So you can store up to 10 gigabytes of videos on there. I found this to be a really great feature. If I was stuck, I don't have a backup video recording system in here. I can only record once, but I can record the live stream using Ustream.tv, and it was a great, great feature. I was just going to say, you have to really move on to like a premium plan, and the premium plans they're expensive. But if you're really serious about live streaming, then these plans might plans might suit you. You've got a starter plan, which is $99 per month, and that allows you to have 100 ad-free viewing hours. And for every extra hour, you have to pay 50 cent. It's got unlimited video storage. So if you want to store all your videos on there, you can store as many videos as you want. You can manually record. There's no branding. You've got basic analytics as well. And you can also do HD broadcasting, which the free version has as well. So that's the biggest thing here is it's ad-free. It's not ad-supported. You get 100 hours of ad-free streams, which is a big deal, right? That's a big deal, okay? And then you've got the $499 per month is the next plan up. You get 4,000 ad-free hours, viewer hours, and 25 cent per extra viewer hour. You also get unlimited video storage. You get auto-record feature, which means you can say, okay, at certain times, I want Ustream to automatically record or automatically stream. This is a great feature, and this is something that I'm seeing the need for now, because I want to stream a church, and 5 minutes before Mass starts, I want the live stream to go live automatically and stuff like that. So, you know, this is something that's really cool. $499 per month. That is a lot of money. I must admit, for me, it's just way out of my league. But if you're a serious live streamer, you want to have professional video streaming. I mean, Ustream has probably got some of the best features and the most features for podcasters, for live broadcasters. It's got chat rooms. It's got, you can record all of your live streams onto and store it on Ustream. This is something that's really, really big. And then you've got the $999 per month enterprise version. You can have full branding, so you can completely brand your stream so that it doesn't have any Ustream logo. It's just completely your branded stream. This is the real pro streaming. You got 9,000 ad-free hours, 20 cent for extra viewer hour. I mean, this has got a lot of features. And then you can actually contact Ustream if you want unlimited viewer hours. That's going to be even more expensive. I'd say that's maybe $1,500 a month. So the premium plans for Ustream are very expensive, but you can get started on a free plan with Ustream.tv. If you need to be able to make a backup recording of your podcast and record it directly to Ustream.tv and store it with up to 10 gigabytes of storage, Ustream is a good option to go with. But really, what really gets me is the in-stream ads. They're very, very disruptive. And that's something that I'm not a big fan of with Ustream. So the next streaming service we're going to look at is Livestream. Now, I kind of like Livestream's approach. Livestream's approach is you can have a free account, free basic account, and it's ad-free. There's going to be no ads on the free basic account. But the viewers of the live stream must have a Livestream account. So in order to view that Livestream, you must be a member of Livestream in order to see that Livestream. So that's, you know, that's one thing. And then you also can't embed the stream on your website. That's a big thing for me, because I like to have my brand, my website, as the home hub for my podcast. And if I can't embed it on the stream on my website, that's a big deal for me. But for some people who don't have a website, they just want to stream live, this is a great thing because it's completely ad-free. If your podcast or if your live stream listeners are quite tech savvy, they'll be able to figure out how to create a live stream account, and then it won't be such a big deal. And I really love the way that all of Livestream's plans are completely ad-free. That's a big plus here. But you can also go with premium plans, and premium plans are really Livestream's strong point I mean, Livestream is known for its great live streaming services, really high quality with both Ustream and Livestream. They have really, really good quality streams. And their premium plans, the basic premium plan starts at $42 per month. And you get unlimited archive. Viewers can watch without logging into Livestream, and you also get Google Analytics integration. And I also believe you can integrate this on your website. And then you've got the premium version. Actually, you can't embed on the basic version, but with the premium version for $333 a month, you can live stream on any website. You can live stream on Facebook, and you can also can get 7 day per week phone support. So that's another big thing. If you need support, if your live stream is down and you need to contact Livestream at any time, this is a big deal. This is a big deal. If you need to have 7 days a week phone support, then maybe the premium $333 per month plan is the one for you. So that's the Livestream premium plans, a little bit more affordable than Ustream's, but Ustream, I think, has a few extra features. I've been messing around with Livestream recently because I have a live stream broadcaster. As I said, I want to broadcast Mass. And once I have that set up in place, I will go through the entire setup for you and how I did it and how you could go about it if you want to stream Mass in your local area as well, if you want to do that. So the next live stream service I'm going to talk about is Bamboozer.com. And Bamboozer is quite interesting. It's a new kind of upcoming streaming service. You can have a free account or a premium account. The free account has ads on the stream, but they're not intrusive ads. They're overlay ads. They're not in stream ads. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the premium packages that Bamboozer have here. The starter edition allows you to have an ad-free player, and it also has extended statistics, so you can see the exact statistics of your live stream. You're able to broadcast live on Facebook. You have unlimited concurrent viewers, unlimited number of broadcasts, and unlimited storage. That includes 250 viewing hours, and you pay $124 per month, or on an annual plan, you can pay $99 per month. Then you've got the medium plan. The medium plan, $499 per month, or you can pay yearly for $300 per month. You get two accounts, 4,500 viewing hours per month, which is really cool. You get an ad-free player. You can modify your player. You can insert your own logo. You can have extended statistics, API access, services and support, broadcast live on Facebook. I mean, the features just go on here. Of course, you have unlimited storage and unlimited number of broadcasts. But that's $300 a month on a yearly plan. And then you've got the Enterprise Edition, which is $1,000 per month, or on a yearly plan, $600 per month. You have 10 accounts with 15,000 viewing hours per month, and you get an ad-free player. You get basically absolutely everything that you can get in the medium plan, except with up to 10 accounts and 15,000 viewing hours per month, which is a huge amount. So the Bamboozer plans are quite good. You see, every live streaming service out there provides a different kind of plan. Ustream is a very premium service. Livestream is a little bit more affordable, but still provides some of the key features that you might want. And Bamboozer is just a really great service. I mean, it's got alternate pricing. It's got a few different options for viewing hours and different accounts that you can have. So every live streaming service is different. I recommend you check them all out. I did when I was searching. I originally went with Ustream.tv. You can also go with YouTube Live. Now, YouTube Live was kind of introduced about, I would say, 1.5 to 2 years ago. And it was a very exclusive service. It was provided to people who had YouTube channels with over 1,000 subscribe, over 15,000 subscribers, I think it was. It was a very exclusive, very few number of YouTube accounts and YouTubers who could have access to YouTube Live, the YouTube Live service. There are mostly gamers or some kind of, you know, short form video kind of YouTubers. And like Google didn't really open it up to podcasters. That wasn't, YouTube Live wasn't really the target for podcasters. They weren't trying to target YouTube Live for podcasters until Google brought out Google Plus Hangouts on Air, which you can stream live to YouTube Live on Air, which is really, really cool. Now, I just want to talk a little bit about Google Hangouts. I know a podcast that is done, the Podcasters Roundtable. You can go to thepodcastersroundtable.com. I highly recommend you check out that podcast, the Podcasters Roundtable. If you're interested in podcasting, you want to stay up to date with the podcasting community and podcasting news, I recommend you definitely check out that podcast. They have some really great podcasters on there. Ray Ortega hosts is up there. Ray Ortega is a brilliant podcaster from thepodcasterstudio.com. And he does a Google Hangout on Air. The Podcasters Roundtable might have five, six, even six hosts on it at once, or guests. And so Google Hangouts on Air is an ideal solution for that. Multiple people in on one conversation, you can stream it. Google does all the hard work for you with the live stream. All you have to do is provide your video. Google provides all the bandwidth to stream that Google Hangout on Air. It's really great. And then it'll also record it for you. You can put it up on YouTube after the fact. This is just something that's really, really incredible. And I think, you know, I was talking about this on Talks About Tech Weekly. I'm really getting more into Google Plus. When I was on a Google Hangout there last week, I was talking to a number of different podcasters. And when I first started using Google Plus, Google Hangouts was a very limited service. There wasn't a lot of features, but When I tried out Google Hangouts first, I was thinking, wow, this could be really cool for podcasters. Didn't have quite all the features I was looking for at the time. But now I've just gone back to Google Hangouts. You can put in your own lower thirds, like what I'm doing with Expert Broadcaster. You can do so many really, really cool features, so many cool things with a Google Plus Hangout. You can do some really advanced video intros and cool, really cool stuff with Google Plus Hangouts on Air. And I think this has allowed a lot of audio podcasters to go ahead and go to video, create a Google Hangout on Air, and really up their viewers, up their listeners, and just overall get out there and live stream. You don't need a lot of bandwidth. You can do this on 150 kilobits per second, very little bandwidth. That's mostly because Google handles all of the heavy encoding and the heavy broadcasting and all that kind of quality stuff. All you have to do is provide your own video and your own audio. You just need enough bandwidth to do a Skype conversation, basically, or a Google Hangout. That's all you need. And Google, do the rest. And this is something that's really cool. I've been looking into it, looking into doing shows. If I was doing a show with more than three guests on, I would definitely look at just doing Google Hangout on Air, because I don't have enough resources here physically to do a show with more than three guests on Skype at once. Whereas with a Google Hangout, you can add up to nine people at once. I'm not sure I'd want to listen to a podcast with nine people at once, because it would be kind of hectic, but you can do that if you want. So that's something that's really, really cool. If you have a lot of hosts on your show and you really want to start live streaming, check out YouTube Live. That's youtube.com/live if you want to check that out. And now I'm going to talk about my new live streaming service, Justin.tv. Now, I moved from Ustream to Justin.tv. And there is a fairly large reason why I did that. And with Ustream, I was not happy with the amount of ads. That was the big thing. Of course, it's a free service, but the ads were really intrusive. And I got a lot of people who were watching my live stream and they were saying, oh, these ads, oh, not another ad, you know. And so I decided, you know, I'm going to move to Justin.tv. Now, the free version of Justin.tv, which I'm running off now, has ads, but they're non-intrusive ads. They're very non-intrusive ads. Now, the plans for Justin.tv, these are the biggest features here of Justin.tv. You have one plan on Justin.tv, okay? It's $10 a month, okay? For a year, it's $80 for the year, okay? If you want to go monthly, $10 a month, that's $120 for the year. Or you can go with the yearly plan for $80, okay? And you have one plan, everything unlimited. Now, there's a reason why it's $80 for the year for ad-free streaming. And that's because the features, okay? With this pro version of Justin.tv, you can watch Justin.tv without any ads. You can also stream without any ads. There's no bandwidth restrictions. And you also get a pro badge, and you can customize your live stream in the chat room and all that kind of stuff. But you do not get the feature to be able to record your live streams to your server, have unlimited, you know, storage to store all those live streams that you've recorded on your account. You can't do that. You just can't do that. And that's one thing. For me, I don't need to do that because I record everything locally here. It is something that I like to have as a backup recording, but that's a nice to have. And with these kind of plans, I'm planning to go with a premium account, you see. And $80 a year is something I can definitely afford. Whereas if I go with Ustream with a $600 a month plan, I can't afford that. It's just something that I can't afford being a podcaster because I'm on a limited budget. I can't, you know, I love doing this, but I don't have that kind of money. So this is definitely a great option. If you want to do this low cost, you want to give your viewers the best experience you possibly can. Justin.tv, they do great. They do great quality. If you're on the live stream, you're watching it right now. They do great quality. They do great audio, great video. They don't have some of the premium features that some podcasters might want to have. But for $80 a year, I don't think you can go wrong with that. I mean, that's just a really great price. So the IAIB network, the International Association of Internet Broadcasters, did a Andrew Zarian, who kind of co-founded this International Association of Internet Broadcasters, did a blog post on the network website talking about each one of the live streaming services, and he talked about the pros, the cons, and why you would want to use it. So I recommend you check that out, and I'll put that in the show notes for this episode of Inside the Studio as well, if you want to check that out. I just want to talk briefly about the IAIB, the International Association of Internet Broadcasters. This was set up by Spencer Coburn and Andrew Zarian about a year ago now. And basically what it was set up to do is to bring podcasters and internet broadcasters together as a community to help one another, to talk about different gear, experiences with podcasting. And I really love this idea. If you're a podcaster or an internet broadcaster, you're starting off, you want to get out there, I recommend you check out the IAIB. Join, it's free. There's nothing you have to do. Check out the discussion forums. There's lots of great discussions on there. Check out the blog. They also have a spotlight where they interview successful podcasters or interesting podcasters and video broadcasters and internet broadcasters about how they got to success. Andrew Zarian does all the interviews over there at the GFQnetwork.com. For example, here on the latest news, they have a blog here. On the latest news here, they're talking about the new Logitech C930E to be coming soon. I'm really excited about this because I'm looking for a new webcam, maybe, possibly. This is 1080p webcam. And I really want to kind of try out some high quality webcams. I'm going to be honest, from what I've seen of the C910 and C920 webcams from Logitech, they're really high webcams, high quality webcams. I can't tell the difference between if the person is using a professional video camera or just using the Logitech C910. That's me being honest. I cannot tell the difference. They've got some great blog posts. Mike Phillips, who is a really great audio guru, a really just, if you need any audio help, he's going to kill me for saying this, but if you need any audio help, you know, Mike Phillips is the guy to go to. He knows everything about audio. He's been in the radio business and internet broadcasting community for a very long time. And he writes a load of blog posts up here. For example, he actually wrote a blog post about Skype and how to get around the ducking issue that a lot of broadcasters have with Skype. And he also talked about understanding aux sends and how to do mix minus and all that kind of stuff, which I was talking about on Inside the Studio. I should have read this this blog post here before I went out and tried to explain mix minus, because I don't think I was too successful in doing that. But you know, there's some great blog posts out there. The discussion forums are great. I really enjoy the discussion forum that they have on there for showing off studio tours. I love looking at people's studios and what people, different people have come up with, what different kind of studios they've got. I think it's great, and I just love watching that kind of stuff. So you should check out the discussion forums. They have lots of video as well as audio discussions on there as well. Now, how do you live stream is the next question. How do you live stream video? There's a number of ways you can do this. The first way, and this is a very simple way, is you can use the web interface. Every video live streaming service has a web interface. You log into your account and you click the go live button, and you say you allow all the flash stuff, and then you select a webcam, you select a video source, and you also select a microphone, and you press go, you press live, you press stream. And you can get your stream out there. If you just want to do one webcam live streaming, if you're just doing an audio podcast and you just want to put it out there as a video, one webcam, just so that people can see what's going on, you can do that very easily through the web interface. Now, the cons with using the web interface is the quality isn't that great. You're limited to about 360p, I believe, and also you're limited to the amount, the bitrate that you have. So, through the web interface, you can only stream at certain bit rates and certain qualities. You certainly can't do HD. The second option that you could go with is using Adobe Flash Media Live Encoder. Now, this is a free program for Mac and Windows that's been developed by Adobe, and it's a Flash Media Live Encoder. It's an encoder. It'll encode your stream and send it out for you. You can select a video source and an audio source. The video source could be a webcam, or it could be the virtual output from a program such as Wirecast or XSplit Broadcaster. You also need an audio source, of course. And then you need to put in your unique feed URL and the details. You can get this by logging into your live streaming service account. Usually, if you log in and you go to help, there's usually a tutorial on how to use Adobe Flash Media Live Encoder with that live streaming service. You put in your unique password and your unique feed URL, and then you can get set up. It's pretty straightforward. And then you can get set up, and you can do HD streaming to any of these live video live streaming services. And you can get really, really high quality with Adobe Flash Media Live Encoder. Completely free. I was looking at doing that before the show, and I actually got XSplit Broadcaster up and running. It's a great backup for me. And the third option you could go with is using a video broadcasting software or program, such as Wirecast, Wirecast for Mac and PC, Wirecast from Telestream, telestream.net if you want to check out Wirecast. Wirecast is a great program. I highly recommend it. I wish I had Wirecast, I'll be honest with you. I really do wish I had Wirecast. But it is, it's $500, $495 if you want to get Wirecast. It's well worth the money. Trust me. Wirecast is a great program. But you could do it with Wirecast. You could do it with Expert Broadcaster too, like what I'm doing. Expert Broadcaster and Wirecast basically have Adobe Media Flash Live Media Encoder built right into the program. So you can stream right from the program. You don't have to go to externally to Adobe Live Flash Media Live. I said that wrong. you know what I'm talking about. You can also use VidBlaster. They all have integrated streaming functionality. They basically have a live encoder built right into them. Or for the fourth option, if you're going really high end, you could use your hardware video production system. You could to stream it, such as a TriCaster. TriCaster has, it's a Windows machine, it's a Windows computer with loads of capture cards in it, basically. And you can live stream directly from that box. Okay, so that pretty much covers everything I want to say about video live streaming. Personally, for me, I think Justin.tv is the best option for me. It's got all the features that I want, no more and no less. It's just perfect for me, and also it's very reasonably priced, and that's why it's perfect for me. All right, I'm going to try and do a quick live demo of Expert Broadcaster and my setup. Now, I'm running a demo system over here because my main system is actually providing this podcast for you right now. But I'm going to see how well this is going to work out. I don't know how well this is going to work out. Let me actually restart Desktop Presenter here. So I'm actually using Desktop Presenter, which is a great feature of Wirecast, but I'm using it through Ustream Producer, which is a free version of Wirecast, and then bringing it in and incorporating it with XSplit. So that's, if you're wondering how I'm using Desktop Presenter, that's actually how I'm doing it. So let me see here. Is this responding? Yes, it is. Okay. So this is my demo machine. This is actually my old desktop computer that I used to stream off of. I couldn't do a HD stream, unfortunately, but let's kind of go in depth here. This is Expert Broadcaster. I've just started up. Oh, there's a few things on this, on these scenes here. Let me just remove that. So if you're listening to the audio, just come on over and get the video because you really ought to see this. But I can try and explain it at the best way that I possibly can. Expert Broadcaster is a professional broadcasting piece of software. A lot of gamers use it if they want to live stream their games. It's got a lot of great features for both internet broadcasters and podcasters, as well as gamers. And so it's a very simplistic interface. You've got one main window here you can bring in sources into. Let's see if I've got any cameras in here. I can add in a Manicam virtual webcam. And you can see here it comes up in the top left corner of the screen. You can edit that. You can expand that and make the make it a little bit bigger or smaller if you want to do that. And you've got up to 12 scenes. So you can have 12 scenes, each with something different in it. So you can have one webcam or one camera source or one video source on scene one. You could switch over to scene two and then add in a different video source, right? So this is all very, very easy to do. And SplitCam is opening up on me. I don't want to do that. Thank you very much. So there you go, right? That's pretty much the functionality of Expert Broadcaster. And then you can add or remove sources. You can have multiple layers, add titles, media files, screen regions, IP cameras, game sources, Skype videos, live streams. I mean, the list goes on and on. The amount of features that you have with Expert Broadcaster is incredible. You can add in so many things. There is a few things that I really wish Expert had, So you can actually preview each scene as well by pressing the shift button, and it brings up a live preview of that scene for you. But it doesn't have a preview and program, which is very... So you have one screen, you can select a scene, bring it to the preview, and then bring it over to the program. You can't do that in Expert Broadcaster, and that's one of the things I'd love to see in a future version. But apart from that, it's really good. Now, there's a few things that I found with streaming, okay? If you go to your general settings here, you can go through all your profile stuff, and then you can set up your... You can set up here, for example, I want to select my USB audio device. You can set up your audio. You can set up all the audio delay if you want to, if you need a bit of a delay in there, if you want to do that. You can enable Skype integration, enable game source feature if you want to do that. And then you've got your channels. You can set up a local recording. You can set up all your quality settings in here, which I do. And then you can also stream. You can stream live to Justin.tv and Ustream is what I've got set up here. And what I find is the local recording, the encoder that's built into XSplit is not the best encoder in the world. So it is good, but it's not the best for audio. Okay, so what I like to do is I like to use this new piece of software that I just recently found called Open Broadcaster Software. Now let me see if I can make this a little bit bigger so that you can see this. Open Broadcaster Software, as you can see, is a little bit similar to XSplit Broadcaster, a similar, I want to say similar, interface. It's got scenes, but it's a little bit, it's in some ways better, in some ways worse, okay? I really like the interface of XSplit Broadcaster because it's so easy to use and so easy to get around. It really works for my podcast and internet broadcasts. But what I really love about Open Broadcaster Software is, number one, it's open source. So I can take the source code and I can do whatever I want with it, right? I can develop for this. I can contribute to the software, to improving it and getting more features available and stuff like that if I wanted to do that. But it's got a great encoder. So if you go into your settings here and go to your encoding, you can set your bitrate, which I like to set to 10,000 so that I get the best quality I possibly can. I also like to set the buffer size to the same. I use the AAC audio codec, and I set it to 320 kilobits per second. Reason why is because I want to make sure that my audio is the highest quality audio I can provide, because audio is the most important thing in my podcast for me. Like, I could have poor video, but the audio is the most important thing to me. And then for my broadcast settings, you can set a live stream. So this will live stream for you, or a file output only. Okay? And this is what I do, because the encoder is so high quality. I set my encoding settings to, yeah, I'd like to say that, please, to 10,000 kilobits per second, my broadcast settings to file output only, and I save it. Then for my video settings, I set it to 720p because I record in 720p. 30 frames per second. And my audio, I actually, believe it or not, put a delay of 200 milliseconds. And that's because, and I'll actually explain why I do that delay in just a minute, actually. And then for this, I put the CPU preset on ultra fast. That puts the least amount of stress and strain on the CPU while I'm recording, which is very important on a machine, on a computer that's very taxed. If you want a free solution to XSplit Broadcaster and you don't have a very fast computer, XSplit Broadcaster is quite intensive. But this Open Broadcaster software is completely free, and it's very, very good with low quality, with lower end CPUs. This software does not take up very much CPU at all. I can actually record in 720p on this old computer that I'm running, even though I couldn't with XSplit. The encoder is super high quality, and there's a number of reasons why this is so much better on the CPU. First of all, I've actually got a video capture device set up here, which is XSplit Broadcaster. You just, by the way, if you want to add a new scene, you just click Add Scene, Create a New Scene, and then you add a source, be it a video capture device if you wish, right? And you can switch between sources. But you can see there's nothing coming up on the screen. You have to press preview stream, and then it'll preview the stream. Okay? And it'll switch capture devices as well. I can bringing in XSplit Broadcaster right there. You see you've got audio monitoring here. You can bring down the audio levels here if you want to do that. It's basically very similar interface to XSplit. You've also got media if you want to control the media volume. It doesn't have the functionality to be able to bring in a video, and that's one thing, because I have intro and outro videos, or an intro video, and it doesn't have that feature yet, Open Broadcaster Software. So that's one downside to using Open Broadcaster Software. But it's completely free. The encoder is incredible. I take the virtual output from XSplit Broadcaster, feed it into Open Broadcaster Software, and then I put a 200 millisecond audio delay on that. And that's because there's about a 200 millisecond delay on the virtual output of XSplit Broadcaster. Record locally, 10,000 kilobits per second, really, really high quality encoding. I'm so impressed with this. And then I live stream from XSplit Broadcaster. That's how I do it. And I'm super impressed with Open Broadcaster Software. It's one of my favorite broadcasting programs out there, and I highly recommend it. I just found out about it just, I think, a week ago. And it's just got everything I need. Got everything that I need right there for encoding. You can also do a live stream. The only problems with live streaming, and this is some, you know, downsides to it at the moment, is when you live stream, you can also save to file, but it has to be the same settings as the live stream. And for me, let me close this down. For me, I can live stream at about 200 kilobits per second, but I can do a local recording at 10,000 kilobits per second. So I can put out a local recording that's much higher quality than my stream. So that's why I stream on XSplit and I record on Open Broadcaster Software. And that's what I'm doing right now, to get really high quality audio and really high quality video. So I'm really impressed with the software. So thank you to the developers of Open Broadcaster Software. Very, very, very good piece of kit. Okay, I'm not too bad. I'm 47 minutes into this episode. And another feature of Open Broadcaster Software is you can keep track of the time. You can have a countdown timer right there. So you can keep track of how long you've been recording for, which is just something that is just really, really great. Okay. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the whole website and the web aspect of podcasting. And it's very important that you have a good website. I recommend you use the tool WordPress for your podcast. Because podcasting is kind of like blogging, except in audio and video form. I highly recommend that you use WordPress, because it's got so many great features for podcasters. It's got plugins, custom plugins that have been created by developers who are podcasters themselves. And for creating all of my RSS feeds and all my podcast feeds, I've always used PodPress. PodPress is a great plugin. But what I found is, and at the time I didn't know this, PodPress is actually a discontinued product. A few years back, they threatened to pull the PodPress plugin from the WordPress plugin store. They wanted to discontinue. They couldn't continue with supporting the PodPress plugin. And then another company took it over and continued to support it. But right now, there's very few updates. I don't think it's updated at all. And for a WordPress plugin, that's not a good thing. And the reason why is because every so often WordPress comes out with a new update. They might include in new APIs, and all applications have to update in order to be compatible with this version, this new version of WordPress. And I might update to a new version of WordPress one day, and my PodPress plugin won't work. And that's not a good thing. So I decided, okay, I'm going to have to move to a more up-to-date version of one of these plugins. And probably the most popular one, the one that's used by pretty much every podcaster, is PowerPress. PowerPress is by the Blueberry Podcasting Network, by the way. Blueberry provide statistics, as well as they also provide media hosting. If you're looking for hosting, they do a great affordable media hosting solution. They also provide, of course, PowerPress. And PowerPress is very similar to PodPress. Works in the pretty much the exact same way, but it's constantly being updated. It's really heavily supported. It's got far more features, far more audio and video players you can choose from. It's got HTML5 as well as Flash players. It's got so many features. And I decided, okay, I'm going to have to update right now, or I'm going to be at risk that the next time I update to the latest version of WordPress, all my podcasting feeds are going to be down, and then I'm going to have to get a warning, or iTunes are going to be sending me warning emails saying, oh, your podcast feeds aren't working properly, and that's not good. So I decided, okay, this is going to be, I was preparing myself. I had a full day to work on this. I was saying, this is going to be tough. How am I going to get my feeds across? So I did a little bit of research. All you have to do is download the PowerPress plugin, then activate the PowerPress plugin and deactivate the PodPress plugin. Automatically, all of your PodPress feeds are brought over to PowerPress. Straight away, you don't have to do any work whatsoever. All of your RSS feeds are automatically brought over to PowerPress. I was like, what? This is crazy. This is incredible. This is the best thing that's ever happened to me. Well, in terms of WordPress, this is definitely one of the best WordPress plugins you can get out there. So I had a go at it, and I was doing more research into more of the features that PowerPress has over PodPress. Completely customizable players, multiple players. My favorite player is the 1 pixel out player, which is probably the most popular audio player out there, which you can get on PowerPress, and you can create a customized with different colors. That's what I did with mine. It's also got a customized video player if you're interested in that with HTML5 support. I'm just completely amazed by the features that PowerPress has. I absolutely love it. And the fact that there's a huge development team behind it, I just love it. And I did a PodPress tutorial, because I use PodPress myself. If you're on PodPress right now, move over to PowerPress. All you have to do is install the plugin, activate it, deactivate PodPress, and you're done. That's all you've got to do. That's all you got to do. It's very, very easy to do, and it's well worth your while doing that. Okay. You can go to blueberry.com/PowerPress for more information if you want that. Of course, all the links will be in the show notes to this podcast. Okay. Let's move on to talk about an email that every podcaster or internet broadcaster who has a podcast on iTunes received. If you have an email address on your podcasting feed, you will have received an email from iTunes with a little bit of a few announcements. Okay. And I'll read out the email that I received. Dear podcast provider, new cover art requirement. iTunes has been completely redesigned, and there are new requirements for podcast cover art. To be eligible for featuring on iTunes Store, a podcast must have 1400 by 1400 pixel cover art in JPEG or PNG format using RGB color space. The image URL must end in JPG, JPEG, or PNG. And the server hosting the image must allow HTTP head requests. See our technical specs for details. Server configuration requirement. Podcast streaming playback on iTunes requires all hosting servers to enable byte range requests. Please confirm your hosting servers have this functionality enabled. If you work with a third-party hosting service, please contact them to confirm this functionality is enabled on their servers. 155 countries and more than 100 languages. iTunes Podcasts has launched in additional countries around the world. Note that reviews and ratings are unique to each country. Podcasts are published in more than 100 languages. Regards, the iTunes podcast team. Now, let me just say to you that a lot of this information that was put into this email is just kind of a reminder. This is no new news, really, but I will explain to you what this means. And I have already said about the new cover art requirement for iTunes. Basically, Apple are telling you that you must update your podcast artwork to 1400 by 1400 pixels. Or your podcast will not be featured. And, you know, this is something that Apple have said, but I have seen podcasts that have lower resolution artwork or that don't have any podcast artwork at all, and they're getting featured, right? But it's still in your best interests to put 1400 by 1400 pixel artwork up there. Now, if you have paid someone to do your artwork and they provided a 300 by 300 pixel artwork for you, you're probably going to have to go back to the person who provided you with that artwork, and they'll have a master file, master Photoshop file or whatever, Illustrator file, which is saved in a much higher quality format or much higher resolution density, pixel density. And you're going to have to get it in 1400 by 1400 pixels. That's the only way. If you've created it yourself, you're going to have to recreate it in 1400 by 1400 pixels. What I did was, and this has come out about a year ago, by the way. This was originally announced about a year ago. There's nothing new here at all. I mean, Apple, they originally said 1200 by 1200 pixels, and then a few weeks later they said, no, 1400 by 1400 pixels, actually. Sorry about that one. which was kind of a little bit annoying. But what I did was, when that came out, I just made completely new podcast artwork. It was time for me to make new podcast artwork anyway. I wanted to revamp my podcast, so I decided to go with a completely new theme for both my podcasts and change the artwork up, make it look really nice. And I saved it as a 2000 by 2000 pixel image. And the reason why I did that is because if Apple want me to increase the size of the image again, I can do that. So that might be a good idea for you to maybe save like a 3000 by 3000 pixel image if you want to do that, so that if iTunes or if Apple wants you to increase the image size in the future, that you will be ready for that and you'll have a master file that's big enough. And so I also recommend that you upload it in JPEG. And the reason why is because JPEG loads faster. PNG is uncompressed, which means that you won't have any quality loss, but it's a much larger file, and JPEG, you won't notice the difference between JPEG and PNG image, really, for what we need here. So I recommend you just take the JPEG. It's much smaller, much easier, much faster to load, and put that as your podcast artwork, okay? And now I'm going to... and then the next thing Apple said was in this email that your image must be hosted on a server that allows HTTP head requests. Now, I'm going to show you how you can find out if your podcast artwork allows HTTP head requests. Now, my personal setup is I host all of my podcast artwork, both of my podcast images or logos or artwork, on my web server, the same server that's on my website. And then I just provide a link to that for my RSS feed. Okay? So, what I'm going to do here is I'm going to show you how you can do this, okay? What you do is you use a program called web-sniffer.net. And I found out about this program from, or this website from Daniel J. Lewis from the audacitytopodcast.com. And he does a podcast about podcasting as well. Recommend you check it out. He does slightly different stuff to me. He's an audio only guy. So he's always talking about Audacity. He uses slightly different tools than me. And he only talks about audio podcasting. I think he does a little bit about video, but he does slightly different stuff on his podcast. So if you want to find out a little bit more about how he does things, I recommend you check out his podcast as well. I mean, all podcasters do stuff a little bit differently. And he's an audio-only podcaster. I'm a video and audio podcaster. So if you go to web-sniffer.net, thanks to Daniel J. Lewis, and let me see if I can bring this up here for you. Once you get to the, it hasn't switched yet on my desktop presenter. It's lagging a little bit. Okay. Once you get to the website, you want to put in the URL for your logo, whatever your URL is hosted on your server. And then there's a few things here. This HTTP version. I want you to put in, leave it at HTTP 1.1. And then you set the request type to head, and then you press submit and wait for it. And if the request, the HTTP request comes back successfully, then you know that your podcast artwork supports HTTP requests, okay? And also gives you a number of different pieces of information here, which is going to be quite important as well. Let me see here. Yeah, okay. Which is going to be quite important as well. Now, so that's how you can test to see if your artwork is... if your artwork... sorry. If your artwork supports HTTP head. That's all you have to do. If it does, then you're sorted, okay? That's all you have to worry about with the podcast artwork. Now, why would Apple want you to use 1400 by 1400 pixel artwork? And that's because Apple have recently released new devices with really high quality displays. These are called Retina displays. The new MacBook laptops that they have really high quality displays. And if you have an image that's 300 by 300 on a computer with that kind of quality display, it's just going to look absolutely terrible, right? So Apple wants you to put up higher quality artwork to make it look nicer on the new devices. For example, the iPad 3 and iPad 4. These devices have Retina displays. So when you're in the podcasts app and the image is being shown up, that's at 1400 by 1400 pixels, okay? And so it's in your interest to make sure that your podcast artwork looks as good as it possibly can. Okay? It's very important. The first thing that your listeners or viewers see when you upload or when they see your podcast on iTunes is your podcast artwork. So it's very important that you have nice, high-quality, well-designed artwork and professional-looking artwork, because people say, ooh, this podcast looks like it's high-quality, because they see the... and it's funny, because they see the high-quality artwork. And that has happened to me. I've just completely said, disregarded podcasts because they don't have artwork or their artwork is poor quality and it looks like a DIY job, even though the content might be great. I do that. You know, it's natural for people to think that. So it's very, your appearance is definitely very important. So it's very important that you update, if you haven't already, just update your artwork to 1400 by 1400 pixels. Okay. Now, the next thing is the server configuration requirement, is the next thing that was covered on this, in this email. And this is something that's a little bit new. Basically, it tells you that iTunes requires hosting servers to enable byte range requests. What is a byte range request? Well, I did a little bit of research into this. A byte range request allows you to download a certain range of data from the file rather than having to request to download the entire file. So, for example, we'll take the Podcasts app for the Apple Podcasts app, which is available on all iOS devices. Okay? This allows you to have to subscribe to all of the podcasts that you want to on the iTunes Store. And let's say you go from the first minute of that podcast to the 10th minute of that podcast. Okay, you scroll through to the 10th, you skip to the 10th minute of that podcast. Okay, rather than the podcast app having to request the entire file, so you have to wait until the file has loaded to the 10 minute mark, what the podcast app does is it uses a byte range request. So, for example, if you just start playing the podcast app does a byte range request for the entire podcast download. But if you skip to that 10-minute mark, it'll say, I want a byte range request from 10 minutes to the end of the episode. That's essentially what it does. And it really speeds up for the consumer point of view of it, really speeds up the whole experience of streaming. This is only if you're streaming, not if you've downloaded the file already, because it's downloaded locally. But if you're streaming it, that's how it works. So it's important that your server has this. Now, okay. So how do you find out if your media hosting service has this feature for byte range requests? Well, if you are hosting with Blueberry Media Hosting, which I highly recommend you do, great, great service. Blueberry Media Hosting, Libsyn, which is another great hosting service for hosting all of your audio files and video files. Do not host your audio on your website, on your website server. I did this. It does slow down your website slightly, and that's because the server's working harder for those media files. So do not do that. Use these services. The servers on these services are designed specifically for handling audio and video. Okay? So Blueberry or Libsyn, great services, great pricing too. And also archive.org media hosting also announced that they do support byte range requests. And archive.org, if you don't know, is a free service for storing audio and video files as well. And it's completely free, but there is a downside to it. The servers are much slower. They're not as fast as Libsyn and Blueberry, so the files are not going to load as fast. And I actually do use archive.org. I do not use Blueberry, and I do not use Libsyn. The reason for me is because I cannot afford it. If I could afford Libsyn or Blueberry, I would do that. But I'm on a limited budget, as you may know. I'm on a limited budget. So I can't afford Libsyn and I can't afford Blueberry. So I use archive.org. It does fine. It is slower. So if you can possibly go with Blueberry or Libsyn, I would recommend you do. Gives your listeners and viewers a better experience. Especially if it's video. If it's video, that's a little bit pushing it for what the archive.org servers can take. But it does support byte range requests, okay? Now, let's say you didn't know if your hosting service, if you had like a dedicated server or something like that, if you didn't know if that supported byte range requests, well, you can go back to my good old friend, the websniffer.net. Let's see if it'll update that. And you can actually put in the URL for your podcast. In this case, it talks about Tech Weekly, episode 60. I put in the URL right in there. And I say I want the HTTP version to be 1.1. I also want to use the request type of head, just like what we did with the image URL. Or with the podcast artwork, and then you submit it, okay? And then it gives you information on that file, right? So it'll obviously go through and do the request, the HTTP request, tell you what kind of content it is. But the most important thing here is down at the very bottom, it'll tell you accept ranges, bytes. If it says accept ranges, bytes, that means that it supports byte range requests. That is very, very, very important. That is what tells you if your file, if your audio or video file supports byte range requests. In my case, it does. And that's a way of testing that. Okay, so that pretty much wraps up today's episode. I ran a little bit over on the time, but I really wanted to explain a little bit more about what this email meant to podcasters. And so I want to thank you for watching or listening to this episode of Inside the Studio. And my name is Michael McAndrew. You can follow me on Twitter at TalksAboutTech1 if you want to do that. You can email me at michael@talksabouttech.com. If you want to send in questions to the show, I will answer them on the show for you. If you want to send in a question, if you're stuck with either audio or video or something with your website or something like that, that I can possibly help out, I'll try my best and I'll answer that question for you on the show. If you want to do that, you don't have to, but if you want to do that. And so email me again, michael@talksabouttech.com. And you can also add me to your circles in Google Plus. I'm getting more into Google Plus right now. Google Plus is Michael McAndrew on Google Plus. That's pretty straightforward. So I just want to thank you all for tuning in for Inside the Studio. I'll be back next week with episode 9 of Inside the Studio. And of course, you can watch us live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. UK time. So I just want to thank you all for watching or listening to this episode of Inside the Studio, and I'll see you next time.